I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There. This is a podcast about the outdoors, from your window box and garden, to the fields on the edge of town, to the forests, prairies, seashores, and wilderness. On the show, we explore our relationship with nature through stories, interviews, essays, and even some fiction. We travel around the U.S. and the world with tales of love and heartbreak, passion and adversity, desperation and triumph. A few months ago, we had an interview on the show where I talked about hiking the Colorado Trail. The Colorado Trail is a 500-mile footpath which goes from Denver to Durango through some of the wildest and highest places in the Rocky Mountains. I hiked the trail in 2014, and it turned out to be one of the best things I've ever done for myself. It changed the course of my career and helped me process grief over my mother's death. In case you missed that story, you can go back and hear it on episode 9. The episode is called Solace in Solitude. Today, we're going to hear from another woman who set out on the trail. Her name is Erin Jones, and like me, she was planning to do a through hike. In other words, hike the entire trail in one season. But her experience turned out to be very different.
On the first day, I hike near Denver. The trail starts at Waterton Canyon. It's a blazingly hot day, and at first the trail is not a trail at all. It's a wide dirt road that follows the South Platte River. Large white pickup trucks pass me periodically, and when they do, I lean into the canyon side of the road. Behind me, down the road, through the haze of heat, I notice another backpacker. I stop in the shade for water and allow him to catch up to me. I tell myself I'm allowing him, but he would have caught up anyway. I'm going slow. I'm trudging. He catches up. He looks a few years younger than me. His pack appears more smoothly packed, and he has a rolled bandana tied around his forehead. "I'm Adam," he says, "from Kentucky." I smile weakly at him. I've been guzzling water and I haven't peed all day. The sun beats through my head. My hips ache dully. "Erin," I say, "Wyoming." Adam says he is here with his dad and his brother. "The whole thing," he says, "on to Durango." I lag behind, let him pass. I want to bear my weakness on my own, and also I don't have any words to say. After 6 miles, the road ends and a trail starts, disappearing into the trees. Here, I stop once again for water and watch the other two Kentuckians glide silently past. They nod stoically, unsmiling at me. I assume I will not see them again, that their competence outstrides mine. It's my first day on the Colorado Trail. I wanted to hike the trail because I felt oppressed by the concept of adulthood. Or more accurately, I felt oppressed by how I had decided adulthood looked and felt. I was in graduate school. I hurried, powerless in a whirl of classes and a thesis and a job and an uncertain relationship and an even less certain future. I craved certainty, and I felt that I wouldn't get it in my current frenzied routine. I wanted to know myself again. I wanted to find out what I wanted. And so, I decided to hike. Two days later, it is morning, and I've hiked nearly 30 more miles. I don't feel like a real hiker yet. It's 11 in the morning and I'm thirsty. I haven't been able to fill up my water bottle in 13 miles. A fire burned through this section maybe 10 years ago, and the remaining trees jut black and stubby from the waxy ground. Now, what used to be forest is grassland, totally devoid of shade or water. I hike. According to my guidebook, a fire station squats at the end of this section in another mile. According to my guidebook, it may have water, but not guaranteed. I stop, lean against a charcoal ponderosa stub, get out my last water bottle. It has an inch of hot liquid left. I take a small swallow. If the fire station doesn't have water, I'll have to walk another 3 miles before I get to a stream. For me, with my pack, that's another hour and a half without any water. The insides of my cheeks feel glued to my teeth. My blood feels hot and slow, and it pounds through the top of my head. I put the water bottle away and continue walking. The trail curves. I squint. I see a building in the distance. It shimmers white and square, straight ahead. Could this finally be the fire station? I walk taller, stride toward it. I'm almost grinning. The trail curves away, dancing into an area the fire didn't reach. I turn to look at the fire station over my shoulder. Bit late to the game, I say to it. I glance at the hot, burnt landscape around me. It seems to me that building the fire station there is like closing the stable door after the horse had gotten out. A few minutes later, I walk along the shoulder of a highway, motorcyclists buzzing past, less than a quarter mile from the fire station. Being this thirsty and this close to people who are immersed in civilization feels surreal. They have water, I think. They are going to eat a burger in town for lunch. I jog up the fire station driveway and around the building, throwing down my pack on the spread of white concrete. I pull an empty water bottle from it, white concrete, white metal building, sky so blue it seems white. I can barely see. Where is the spigot? I can't see it. No, I gasp. It's here. It will be here. I stop, stare at the ground. I cannot begin to hike more. I cannot go 3 more miles in this heat without water. But there, at the corner, a spread of dampness on the concrete, a shadow of something cool. I sprint toward it with the water bottle. I kneel at the spigot and turn it on full blast into my water bottle. Hallelujah! I holler. I squeak closed the spigot and sit in the wet beneath it and gulp the cold water. I sigh. Lean back against the hot metal building. I am dirty and damp, and aloud I say, I'm proud of myself. A man appears from the front of the building. He has a half smile on his face. It's the Papa Kentuckian. We're around front, he says, if you want to come join us. Over the next few days, and the next 40 miles, the Kentuckians appeared at moments I felt most lonely, and at moments I felt most as though I did not belong on this trail, that I wasn't good enough for it. They appeared ahead of me and behind me when it was raining and I thought I'd lost the trail, when my feet swelled in odd shapes with blisters, when I believed I was the slowest person on the trail and the least adequate hiker in the universe. They appeared. And then, one day, they didn't. I'd just seen them 3 miles before. We'd been a sorry group. My feet looked and felt like ground beef. Their faces probably matched mine. We were at our lowest point, 75 miles along the trail and not sure about the next 400. We had 30 miles to Breckenridge, our first major town stop. We all fantasized about taking hot showers and buying better gear and making phone calls home. It was getting late in the day. We agreed to camp together 3 miles down the trail. I set off first. After I crossed a shady stream, I set up my tent at the edge of a meadow. From my camp, I could see the Continental Divide. I ate beef jerky. I wondered where the Kentuckians were. And then suddenly, a man appeared on the trail. "Are you Aaron?" he said. I nodded. "Those three guys with the strong southern accent," he said. "The Kentuckians?" I leaned forward. "Yeah, they wanted me to tell you they're getting off the trail."
"Like, off?"
"Yeah, they're going home." The man stepped into my camp and set down his pack. I wasn't going to hike any farther, but they insisted. He shrugged. I sat back, stricken, and also deeply touched. How extraordinary was trail culture that one stranger would hike an extra 3 miles to tell another a message? I can't think what to say. Finally, I say simply, "I'm so sad." "Yeah, well, they seem sad too," the man says. "I mean, they cared enough about you that I was inspired to hike 3 extra miles to give you the message." I thanked him, and then I thought, if they can't do it, I don't know if I can. I took 3 days in Breckenridge. I bought new hiking shoes and wore only flip-flops so my feet could heal. They did, mostly, and I took my new shoes and my slightly lighter pack onto a trail that felt lonelier than it had before, now that the Kentuckians were gone. It felt anonymous. It felt as though none of these people I saw mattered now. I wanted to be left alone. I eased into a routine that felt mostly good. I woke up early and sat in the sleeping bag and drank coffee, staring at the brand new morning light seeping over the trees or the wildflowers or the rocks. I hiked in a caffeinated morning zone that felt free and juicy and fast. I found strength there. My legs grew harder and seemed longer, seemed to eat up the trail with voracity. I thought about strands of poetry I'd half memorized years before, about ideas for essays and trips and dates. I thought about nothing. I sang. I climbed thousands of feet up by noon and hurtled thousands of feet down in the afternoon. I thought, maybe I like this. I stood on top of ridges and breathed. I was above treeline, above the world, sometimes toy towns far beneath me. And then one day near Leadville, my knee twinged. It felt as though something was biting my tendons from the inside, the gentle play nibble of a cat. It didn't hurt, but I noticed it. And something inside me thought, this could turn into something bad. No, I thought, no, I'm not ready to stop hiking. I have a theory about souls. A soul has a length that it needs to stretch, exactly precise and unique to each soul. A thru-hiker has to stretch her soul extra long, longer than usual. You can tell this when you meet thru-hikers. They have to hike a long, long way, and then one day most of them don't. They've stretched their soul all the way out, have found what it looks like when it unrolls. When it does, I figure that's something like self-actualization or enlightenment. A stretched-out soul is an exhale you didn't know you were holding. You're not finished living. You're just inhabiting your life in a new way. What a lucky coincidence when a trail's length is exactly the same length as that of your soul. When my knee twinged, I hitched into the nearest town. I was planning to stop and resupply anyway. I got a ride from 3 young women who were out from Denver on a hut trip. We laughed and traded stories all the way to town. We had friends in common. When they dropped me off, we hugged in front of the hostel, And then I spent a day walking around Leadville in newly clean clothes, without a pack, stretching my knee. It felt better. I got back on the trail. The knee immediately began hurting again, this time sharply, this time downhill and uphill and on flat ground. I limped up ridges and I limped down mountains, and then, after 3 days, I sat down on a rock in tears at the top of a ridge and turned on my phone and called my mother. I was in deep, urgent pain, and I felt powerless, vulnerable. "My knee really hurts," I sobbed. "I'll come get you tomorrow," she said. She picked me up in her dark green Subaru the next day at the Mount Massive trailhead, late afternoon. It had just started to rain. I ducked into her car as the drops became heavier, and she said, "Let's go to a hot springs." I slumped in my seat, my trail stench steaming off my clothes. I felt ashamed. I felt defeated. After a few days with my mom, I went home to Laramie, Wyoming. It was summer, so I didn't have access to student health. I consulted a couple of physical therapist acquaintances. They thought it was probably something to do with my IT band. Probably tight, maybe with micro tears. Apparently it happens a lot to women. Something about the angle of our hips to our knees. The physical therapist acquaintances told me to stretch. I stretched. I went to yoga classes. I spent a lot of time in painful half pigeons, that yoga asana that bends your body over your folded leg, releasing deep inside your hip. And then one day, a few weeks later, when I walked, it didn't hurt. I put on sneakers. I drove out to the trails near my house. I ran. Finally, the pain was gone. But by then, I was starting a new job, and so I couldn't go back to the Colorado Trail. I couldn't finish my through hike. I believe that the length my soul needed to unfurl may not have been the same length as the Colorado Trail. I think it was mostly stretched out, just a few wrinkles left to smooth. But I wanted to quit on my terms. I wanted to decide on a day that felt like any other, on a day that rose cool and gold, alone in a fluffy sleeping bag on the side of a mountain. I wanted to decide on a day I felt powerful, on a day I hiked strong, past high mountain lakes, higher than mountain sheep. I wanted to decide on a day when it rained at 2 in the afternoon and I took a nap under my tent tarp. I wanted to decide, looking out over the whole state of Colorado, today is the day. I choose today. My soul has stretched as long as it needs to stretch, and now it's time to go home. That would not be failure. If all we're trying to do is stretch out our souls, it's not for a trail to decide how long that takes. When the soul is stretched, a thru-hiker has accomplished something deep and exquisite and long and rare, whether or not she has reached the end of the trail. But my soul wasn't done unrolling. It still folded parts of it inside me in kinks and curls. That is a failure. Since I've gotten off the trail, I feel like I'm rushing against a season or a life. I do things that felt unreachable on the trail. I drink coffee at used bookstores, walk lightly without a pack on sidewalks. I can step inside anytime it gets chilly or wet. My knee still hurts sometimes, but it doesn't last long. I run trails near my town in the mornings before I have to work. Sometimes on those runs, I feel one tiny kink of my soul at a time, springing smooth. It's not the same as a solo through hike, not the same expansiveness, not the same focus, not the same presence or beauty. But soul stretching takes its own time, convenient for me or not. And one day, on one of those runs, maybe next year or in many years, I will stop at the top of a ridge, high above even the mountain sheep, and realize, there it is. I'm all smoothed out.
That was Erin Jones. She's a writer based in Laramie, Wyoming. If you'd like to read more of her work, you can visit her website, erinrjones.com. That's erinrjones.com. Okay, so I know the theme music signals the end of the episode, but before you tune out, I have a challenge for you. We're trying to double our listenership, and the best way to do that is through word of mouth. So, if you know someone who you think would enjoy Out There, tell them about the show. Encourage them to subscribe. Maybe even share our website, which, by the way, is outthereshow.com. If each one of you gets just one more person to listen, we'll meet our goal. A big thank you to Andy Martin and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to Out There. You can make a donation too. Just go to outthereshow.com and click support. That's it for this episode. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.